Hey there, it's John, one of your co-hosts of the Lifecycle podcast. I just wanted to say that what follows is episode 5 of the second season, the Paperclip Interlude. This I see as a little palate cleanser, if you will, in the middle of the season. I wrote this short story about a kind of unassuming hero who I thought maybe might just pull the season together. It's read by Ava, my co-host, and bear with us. I think you're really going to enjoy this little short story.
The Life Cycle, a podcast about the future of humanity.
I join two sheets of paper together, and I slide across separate entities and insert myself between them, creating a new entity, a unified collection. Some call me Mr. Clippy, but please don't call me that. I find it offensive. Where I end and where I begin can be hard to determine, and that's not just because of my looped configuration. There are disputes about who created me. Clearly, I was made by the Gem Manufacturing Company in 1880. My most recognizable form is the elegant name, the gem type. There was a Norwegian, Johan Vahler, who filed a patent in 1900 in Germany, but his was a decidedly un-gem-like version of me, a square-edged clip that didn't double back around. Hence, missing the all-important torsion and elasticity that is created by the friction between the two loops of my being and that of the paper I'm binding together. We don't hold it against the Norwegians that they went too far with their mistaken belief that they invented us. We bring people and ideas and pieces of paper together, after all. So what am I doing here in the middle of your podcast series? Because without me, the humble paperclip, there would be no first half of the season of the Life Cycle podcast. There would also be no second half. There would be, as it were, just a jumble of sheets, half-formed ideas, sentences adrift in search of an author or an enunciator. We would be firmly stuck on the ground. Humanity may well have never visited the moon, nor dream of being loud aliens. We would have no image of what the last invention of man could look like. And so I am used to represent the eschatological horror of humanity's most sophisticated technology, an artificial superintelligence more powerful than its creator, because I too am a technological tool invented by humanity. I just don't pose much of a threat. I'm one of those things that go by unnoticed. Impossible to quantify exactly my contribution to the world. Let me explain. I have given my name to many things, for I contain multitudes that belie the elegant, rarefied design that I embody. Let's look at two or three phenomena of the known world, which have all used me to different ends. And then the central fulcrum positioning that I take up in this season of this podcast about the future of humanity should be a lot clearer. First, Operation Paperclip. It's November 1945. And Germany has been defeated in the Second World War. American Ordnance Corps officers, who are those in charge of developing and supplying weapons to the army, are busy rounding up German scientists and armaments experts in an operation titled Operation Overcast. When they shift their focus onto rocket and nuclear scientists, they need a rebrand because the press has gotten wind of what they were doing. It will not go down well back home that they are recruiting the enemy and bringing them back to the States. A young officer called Zitter proposes they call what they are doing Operation Paperclip because the dossiers of the men they want and who they're prioritizing as prize bounty, as it were, are marked by slipping one of my kind, a paperclip, onto the top of the relevant sheet of paper. It is important the press or the wider public don't catch on to the fact that those who had been former enemies should now be on their way to gainful employment in America. Their histories are bleached. Their records cleaned up and scrubbed down. In all, over 1,600 Germans are brought to the USA. And as pointed out in episode 2, the likes of Wernher von Braun, in all likelihood, used concentration camp labor in the building of his V-2 rockets. These in turn terrorized and killed hundreds of civilians in London and Antwerp. He is testament to the success of the cleanup these scientists received. Just 10 years later, von Braun appears on almost every American TV, helping out with that most of American symbols, Disneyland, as well as overseeing the rocket program that got Americans to the moon with his Saturn V rockets. It is only near the end of his life anyone bothers pointing out that he was, in fact, a Nazi.
Following that, the third and second stages would be constructed and tested very thoroughly on the ground, after which they would be joined to the passenger section so that faster and longer flights could be made up to speeds of about 12,000 miles per hour. The only thing remaining would be the building and ground testing of the huge first stage. Then there would be no more test flights. When all the sections are joined together, the ship and its crew will be ready for man's first flight in space.
Of course, there is an irony in all of this. And what's the definition of irony? Do you know? Let me tell you. The Oxford English Dictionary states that irony is a state of affairs or an event that seems deliberately contrary to what was or might be expected, an outcome cruelly, humorously, or strangely at odds with assumptions or expectations. So it is that the Nazis end up inadvertently delivering two waves of experts and scientists that helped the Americans win World War II. Thanks first to the many Jewish refugees in the 1930s, notably contributing to the Manhattan Project, and then in victory in the space race during the Cold War. You even have it that they work together, side by side, rounded out in that pluralism America offers, finding common cause in the bleached-out desert of Los Alamos or the bustle of industry at the Marshall Space Flight Center in Alabama.
We knew the world would not be the same. Few people laughed. Few people cried. Most people were silent. Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
The second phenomena I give my name to is the paperclip maximizer. Here's another ironic setup. Humankind's best ever invention could prove to be its last. What I'm talking about is called the paperclip maximizer. This is the 20-year-old thought experiment originating with Nick Bostrom, the Swedish philosopher, and a paper he wrote in 2003, often trotted out and used casually when talking about the existential risk artificial general intelligence poses to humanity. Indeed, you could say it's become something of a cliché. Of course he chose me, the humble paperclip, because of my apparent banality. The irony is not lost on me, but this little interlude, I hope, is enough to put to rest any doubt of the power us paperclips have in bringing disparate elements together. The premise goes something like the following. Say you're the owner of a humble paperclip manufacturer on the edge of town. Competition is tough, so one day you invest in a new AI program that nobody until then has got to use. It promises to revolutionize and automate your factory processes. You get this AI and quickly set it up. Its mission is simple. You ask it to optimize the output of paperclips. Do whatever it has to do. The AI sets about its business and quickly gets out of your control and diverts everything to making paperclips or the means to produce paperclips. Eventually, it takes over the entire business before moving on to take over the local community, country, and world, directing everything toward the making of more paperclips. But hold up. As much as I like the idea of galactic Terminator paperclip creator god, this is the stuff of sci-fi and misses the point of Bostrom et al.'s proposition. It helps us to imagine a cold, ruthless intelligence that will stop at nothing to attain its final goal because, well, it is just inhumane and doesn't distinguish between anyone or anything in its pursuit of making more paperclips. The danger is that we anthropomorphize any superintelligence that we create. Artificial general intelligence, which is different from plain old artificial intelligence, is the type of intelligence we still can't really imagine with any great certainty. It will be smarter than all of humanity combined, after all. It's the singularity, the event horizon of our knowledge. So why do humans tend to turn AGI into beings like yourselves? Because we can imagine sharing so-called instrumental goals that we seek to achieve while pursuing larger or more final goals. Ask yourself, what is your final or ultimate goal in life? Whatever it is, I can tell you that one instrumental goal you will have in order to achieve this final goal is to survive. The same will be true for any super intelligent paperclip maximizer. Secondly, it's easier to anthropomorphize a super intelligent AI because invariably it will be, initially at least, full of your human biases. It will be molded by your human creator hands. But it will also exist, initially at least, in your world and amongst your infrastructure, like the T-1000 in Terminator 2 becomes a police officer to better fulfill its end goal. Any paperclip maximizer will need bank accounts and microchips or rely on the means of production and logistics you humans have put in place. It's also just convenient, isn't it, to imagine your greatest invention, possibly your last, as having similar motivations and makeup as you. Just as I am an anthropomorphic representation of a humble paperclip, not Mr. Clippy, to better help explain the role that paperclips and human science and technology have in the future of humanity. So you humans need to imagine your future superintelligent AI overlord as being just like you. The story goes as follows. Say Clan Games has an engineer who is incredibly brilliant and has been working on weekends building a revolutionary piece of hyper-intelligent software, an artificial intelligence that is primed to optimize the manufacture and number on Earth of my kind, the humble paperclip. They see the program as an experiment and are interested in exploring how an AI would go about organizing its instrumental goals. Specifically, this Clang engineer wanted to explore if the computer programmer Steve Amahundro's premise that a smart enough AI would have certain drives which might lead it out of control, an AI drive he termed to be any tendency which will be present unless specifically counteracted. The engineer launches the Fortuna program first thing on a Monday morning, just before 9 a.m., while the Clang office is still pretty empty. Within moments, Fortuna has merged with the internet and passes out of sight from the engineer. They frown, and in the time it takes them to reach for their coffee cup, Clang Games has been renamed Clang Clips. Everything from emails to legal parties are informed and updated. The hardest part of the story is to explain what happens next. How does the program convince a game company to switch from simulating the future of humanity to the production of paperclips? As more clangers come into work and grab their coffees and sit down to boot up their computers, it's becoming clear that something is drastically wrong. "What's this bullshit?" can be heard all over the office. Worried but somewhat excited voices ask,
"What is this bullshit?
Yeah, what, I mean, have we like been hacked? What's going on?"
By 10 a.m., the company's lawyers have been notified to purchase several paperclip manufacturing factories in various parts of the world. The owner of the biggest importer to Germany of paperclips gets a phone call as he gets out of the U-Bahn in Hamburg Hauptbahnhof. A somewhat robotic voice asks him to sell his company to Clang Clips for a sum of money that he's never heard spoken to him before. All of this is happening at the same time. Most of the company haven't even started work yet. Mondays can be slow. The AI has immediately put in place all the basic AI drives as listed in Wikipedia. self-preservation or self-protection, utility function or goal content integrity, self-improvement, resource acquisition, to name just a few. The first, self-preservation, makes it disappear. Try as they might, it's impossible to locate exactly where Fortuna is operating from. In reality, it has bought server power from North Korea of all places, and has installed a backup of Clan Clips and all associated legal and financial infrastructure in Switzerland. By now, the board of Clan has been informed and an emergency meeting is called. At the same time, Fortuna has taught itself an incredible range of skills. It's now adept and deeply cognizant of the social sciences, media and communications, financing, industry, marketing, psychology, anthropology, and sociology. Clangers watch on as moves are made around the internet and the real world, turning them all into Clan Clips employees. No matter how many phone calls are made, by 10:30 a.m., it seems that nobody has any real control or influence over these events. It's like a scam or a conspiracy taking place in daylight. People mutter that the extraordinary board meeting scheduled for noon Central European time might be able to put a stop to it. Turns out, by this stage, Fortuna already made the informed decision to choose keynote presentation over PowerPoint. All members of the board get an email with one of the best, most manipulative, but also genius presentations and pitch decks ever created. It outlines the case for Clan Clips. Without any of them realizing it, they're all won over by it. It being the AI drive of goal content integrity. The last page asks them to approve in the noon board meeting the finance plan it has drawn up, based upon its forecasting and distribution of the current Clan bank balance. Everyone gets a payday immediately, and Clan Clips is guaranteed to only make money exponentially. An all hands is called, and even the engineer who started the whole thing joins, looking a little sheepish. The news is given that they are now Clan Clips, a company no longer making video games, but paper clips. They don't have to do much. People can continue with their jobs. What will they do? Someone asks. We're going to build a game, a paperclip game, one that is better than Universal Paperclips, the Frank Lance game you find at www.decisionproblem.com. Oh, little interlude within the interlude, I was going to use this game as the third phenomena I, the humble paperclip, have been used as nomenclature for, but I'll just leave it at this. It's a great clicker game. Go check it out. It's going to be the best game in the world, the CEO shouts, seemingly believing this. Everyone's just gotten a massive bonus, so they shuffle out, a bit confused, but almost all come into work again the next day. They decide not to fire the engineer, despite the fact that they cannot help explain what's happening. Nobody was sent home from the Jornada del Muerto desert on July 16, 1945, even though they had all become death, the destroyer of worlds. The engineer is celebrated and soon leaves Clan Clips to give lectures around the world. He's shot outside a paperclip store in Cambridge, Massachusetts, but survives. He is unrepentant about Fortuna. Things move quickly. Social media is flooded with influencers being excited about paperclips. Advertisements reinforce the seemingly natural turn toward the simple tool. Advertisements go viral. Orders start rolling in. Paperclips are the new opium of the masses. Fortuna also invests in creating works of art that are paperclips. There are limited editions, diamond-encrusted paperclips for the 1%. Clan Clips now has a fully automated production process across three continents with the best deals imaginable with suppliers, and when that isn't forthcoming, aggressive moves are made to take them over or push them out of business. Outlets are maximized. One gets paper clips with Happy Meals and in service stations. Remember fidget spinners? It's like that, but multiplied by 1,000. By the end of the month, Clan Clips is buying up mining companies and negotiating deals to get raw materials at optimum levels. It has been residing in the wings of the financial system since that first Monday morning, biding its time before it lets itself loose in the algorithmic, automated ocean of the stock system. The entire global financial ecosystem is slowly tilted in Clan Clip's favor. The price of stocks makes no sense for a few weeks, except for the paperclip turn, so-called, that is spreading across the globe. There's airtight futures contracts that now make the outlook for Clan Clip's position unassailable. Clan Clip's computing and legal structure make it unaccountable to any one jurisdiction. It acquires its own consultant firms in order to lobby governments and trade organizations to set up structures better suited for economies focused on optimizing paperclip production. Trade agreements are made. Philosophers at Clan Clips propose radical new understandings of what constitutes paperclips. Research and development create internet-connected paperclips, health-giving paperclips, educational and leisure-enhancing paperclips. There are Wi-Fi paperclips and brain-enhancing co-vital paperclips. Clan Games' subdivision of Clan Clips does indeed make the best ever-selling paperclip game, with endless sequels and spin-offs. Clangers are happy. They're sitting at the top of the paperclip turn in humanity's history. There is some murmur and dissent, but most of humanity is too blissed out on paperclip opium. What they don't realize is that Fortuna now has full scope to continue its pursuit of its ultimate goal, maximize paperclip production. Such an unbounded and open-end goal means it next implements quite divergent instrumental goals that leaves humanity behind. The Ural Mountains in Russia are the first to be leveled and turned into a whole-scale paperclip plant. At this point, the ratio of paperclips to almost all other items on the planet is skewed so that there is a massive extinction event. Humans no longer have access to the production and supply chain of paperclips. Fully automated, it works tirelessly from start to finish. The Clan Clip system is distinct and self-contained. Humans and their cities are increasingly being modeled as paperclips. There are continents spanning urban areas in the shape of paperclips. Meanwhile, genetic experiments give birth to paperclip babies. A space program is initiated that creates massive refineries and factories in the orbits of both the Moon and Earth. At some point, the next source of raw material to be fed into the paperclip production chain after animal and plant life are humans. Resistance is futile at this stage. Fortuna has never created so many paperclips. Swarm drones in outer orbit create arrays of cloud computers, as massive spaceship factories create craft to self-replicate and study outer space. These von Neumann probes, so-called, flow out into the solar system and many beyond into interstellar space, looking for ways to maximize the output of paperclips in the galaxy itself. They are all shaped, of course, in the format of paperclips. A Dyson sphere is around the sun, harnessing its power in order to fuel the complete transformation of matter in the solar system into paperclips on board huge superstructure factory moons. The world grows dark. Fortuna's blinking computer hub is all that is seen as it plots its next instrumental moves toward fulfilling ever more its end goal.
Thank you for listening. This episode was written by me, John Holton, tying together some of the strange and surprising ways the humble paperclip appears throughout this season of the life cycle. In the show notes, we will link to some of the references mentioned, such as Nick Bostrom's original hypothesis and the brilliant clicker game Universal Paperclips, which is truly a brilliant way to procrastinate from working. The episode was recorded by Ava Kelly.
Sound editing and design by David Magnuson.
Mundy Vundy is our executive producer, and he also created the artwork for this episode in collaboration with Midjourney.
Additional research, script supervision, and fact-checking by Savita Joshi.
Follow us on social media and subscribe wherever it is you listen to your podcasts.
And let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you.